Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 3, delivered on August 27, 2015. The title of this lecture is Special Topic, Interest Rates and Securities.
Today, special topic, interest rates and securities. Start with the basic couple of concepts that will be covered in the book really very quickly in the following chapters. But in this special lecture, I'm introducing you to some terminology and also to one of the most fundamental principles in all of finance. And then I will show you the last round of what are called the tools of monetary policy and end on a nice note that will jade you some more about our banking and financial banking system and our financial system in general. However, to start with, when you have tried all your life to live the dream, and part of that dream is to have your own home, a house trailer, in Decatur. You know, I make fun of Decatur, and every now and then some guy says, my mom's from Decatur. I know, I used to see her at the truck stop down there. But, easy. Okay, now, finally you go to the bank. I'm going to borrow the money. So I got a loan at the bank. Well, actually, it's in common terminology. That's what we would say. Yeah, I got a loan. And I'm going to make payments, and as I make the payments, I'll be paying interest, but I'll also be paying down the principal amount. Okay, a couple of things about that. First of all, technically in our world, which will be kind of your world, whether you're in finance or not, in business, a loan is actually a sale. You are selling a piece of paper, and a bank is agreeing to buy the piece of paper. You are the issuer of a debt security. The bank is the purchaser. The price the bank pays is the amount that it lends you, more or less with fees and points and all of that. But you are actually the issuer. Well, I didn't write that thing. Yeah, you were the writer. They printed it out to make sure it met their specifications. But they hand it to you. You sign it, and then you give it to them to sign. That's how it works. You are the issuer, and the bank is the buyer. So whenever there is a lending happening, it is actually the borrower who is issuing, selling, writing, any of those words are okay, a security. And the investor, the lender, is the buyer of it, investing in your piece of paper based upon the quality of it and the terms of it and all that kind of stuff. Three kinds of debt. The very short-term kind is called a bill. It's less than a year. The second kind of debt is called a note. A note is longer. It's 1 to 7 years. And finally, there is a bond, which is more than 7 years. Well, I got a bill in the mail. No, actually, you issued the bill, and all they're doing is sending you a memorandum of the bill that you issued. Well, I used electricity all month. They were lending me the money to burn that electricity, and now they're reminding me that I issued them a bill, and they're collecting on it. That sounds a little bit dodgy, but that's actually what's happening. Here's one, right here. Madam, At the very top of this, can you tell me what that says right there at the very top?
Federal Reserve Note.
Federal Reserve Note. We call it a dollar bill, but it's actually a dollar note. This is a debt instrument. This is a debt instrument issued by the United States government. It was purchased by the Federal Reserve, and then they passed it along to you. They printed up a bunch of these to pass along to you. Well, it's a note. So what's its duration? 1 to 7 years. That wasn't complicated. It was right there. Okay, 1 to 7 years. Okay, well, what do you do with when you owe something at the end, when it matures? What do you do? What do? When a bill comes due? You pay it. So in other words, the government has to pay this back in 1 to 7 years. Well, what will happen is that eventually this thing will get old and it's nasty. Oh, this one's been in someone's ass pocket. Well, what does the government do? How does the government pay this bill off when it takes it back? How does it pay it? Do you know? Got any idea how it's paid? Well, they print another one. That's how they do it. Well, actually, they probably print a couple more. Wouldn't it be cool? You pay off your bills by just printing more of the bills. Here's your damn bill back. And I gave you an extra one, so thank me. That's exactly how this thing is paid off. It is paid off through the process of just printing more of them. You see, in a time when there are budget deficits of the U.S. government, they are borrowing money from all kinds of places. They use, in the old days, it was a physical auction table. I've been told not to touch this, and I'll be here as long as we want it there. Well, we'll see about that tonight. But the government does these kinds of auctions where they'll put different paper on the table, and they are selling it for the purpose of rich companies, rich countries, rich trusts, rich investment banks coming and buying it. In other words, lending the government the money so that it can keep going with its budget deficits, coming from spending too much on all kinds of things and not taxing enough to pay the bills. So there are these treasury auctions, and we'll get back to that in just a minute. But there's an interesting difference between consumer debt and the debt of corporations and governments. When you borrow money, you will pay monthly payments. And those monthly payments will cover the interest, but they'll also cover part of the principal. You amortize the loan so that when you make your last payment, you're done with the principal. You're done. It's over. Corporations and governments, their debt is not like that. Their debt is such that all they do is pay the interest all through the life of the debt instrument. And at the end, they pay one last interest payment, and then they pay off the principal amount. So if a corporation issues $100 million with a coupon of 8% for 30 years, all they do throughout the life of that 30 years, every year, they pay an interest payment to the lenders, the buyers of the bond, of $8 million. And then at the end, at 30-year mark, they'll pay their last interest payment, $8 million, and then they pay off the $100 million in one shot. That's how government debt, corporate debt works. It does not amortize over the life of the loan. Now, a lot of corporations, their investors require that they set money aside every year so that they do have the $100 million. But it's not being paid to the lenders. It's just building up so the lenders are sure that they'll get their principal at the end. But that's the big difference between corporate and government debt as opposed to consumer debt. So with that as a backdrop, one last thing to tell you before I go to a story that ends with one of the most important principles of finance. The government borrows money like a blind sailor these days, has been since the early 2000s. Remember that there was, in 1993, we were at the trough. We were had serious budget deficits from the 80s and the early 90s. But then in 1993, after the budgets for 94, 95, the budget deficit began to shrink every year. The economy was just very strong. The stock market was strong. Unemployment was at such a low that the Fed was afraid inflation was going to happen any minute, but it didn't. It just kept rolling forward. By the time we get to about 1998, we were not running deficits. We were running surpluses, which, in other words, the government no longer needed to borrow money, which and that's going to be important in a little while, mentioning that. But the government wasn't borrowing any money. So there were the Treasury auctions ended. We kind of a fascinating thing. But then after about 2002, yeah, the budget deficits returned because of the longest, deepest tax cuts in American history and two theater wars. We started running budget deficits unbelievable, faster and faster. They're beginning to close now again. Over the past couple of years, they've begun to close again. But that heyday when we were running budget surpluses, not anymore. That's going to be important in a little while. But interestingly, the government mixes its debt so that in an auction you might see some auctions are just pure. Oh, we're going to sell $2 billion worth of notes, T-notes, treasury notes. Or we're going to sell $5 billion of bills, notes, and bonds. Sometimes you'll have a pure auction, sometimes it'll be a mixed auction. And at these auctions, those with money, for example, the central banks of other countries that have American dollars in their foreign reserves, they'll come to the auctions and buy treasury paper, in other words, lend the government money. You'll have extraordinarily powerful rich trusts come in, rich people, investment banks on Wall Street will come in and buy a lot of this paper. Banks will buy this paper because it's extraordinarily safe paper. It will pay off. The interest rates are very low because it's safe, but it is absolutely as safe as you can get. The government will pay its debts. If nothing else, it'll just print more money and pay them. And if the printer runs out of ink, we'll just attack another country and pillage it. I mean, we'll take care of our debts, always. The treasury bills are an odd animal, though, in the mix. They're a special kind of debt called a discount bond. One thing I want to make sure you know right off the bat is whenever I talk about any kind of corporate or government debt, by definition, the face value is $1,000. Each of the pieces of paper pays $1,000 back at the expiry. Whether it's 1 year, 30 years, there are some debt instruments that are hundreds of years long, but it will pay $1,000. That's the face value, FV. Now, one other thing, a piece of terminology. It's from long, long ago, centuries ago, that's still out there. Is it off? This is the price. This is a price. But when you see quotes for bonds, they're almost always a tenth of the price. So if I see a bond quoting at $98.75, that actually the price of it in the market is $987.50. The quote is a tenth of the price. Make sure you know that, because if I say quote the bond, you give me a tenth of what you found for the price, okay? And make sure that you, whenever you're doing calculations, if I give you a quote, turn it back into a price for your calculations and then back it in back to the quote. I have an interesting story. A fellow I know years ago, he fancied that he was going to be a day trader, and he had a pile of money. He was an eye doctor with tons of money, and he started buying stocks, and then he decided he was going to buy some bonds. And this price is important because he bought 10 bonds at quoting at $98.75. And he nearly had a heart attack when the broker came back with a statement that he had just spent $9,875 on bonds. What the hell? They're ripping me off. Frank, what did you think? Did you think those? Yeah, it said $98.75. That's 10 of those, that's $987. No, it's not. That is $987. Well, why didn't someone tell me that? They assumed that you would know that before you start playing in the stock market, you moron. But anyway, I didn't call him a moron. He was buying dinner that night. But a bill is a little bit unusual in the sense that you buy it, and a year later, you get $1,000. It's a discount instrument. In other words, it doesn't pay you interest like a coupon or a check. All it is that you buy it for less than $1,000, and you get back $1,000 in a year. So you earn the interest on the spread between the price, which was below $1,000, and the $1,000 you get. Those are called discount debt instruments, and the treasury bills are discount debt instruments. So keeping that in mind, I'm going to show you a little math. It's just arithmetic math. It's nothing really deep and complicated. Here we go. Let's say we have a treasury auction. A treasury auction that has only, it's a T-bill auction. A bunch of T-bills on the table. Now they do it all electronically anymore. But there was a time when there was literally paper on the table and the investors would just walk up and pick up pieces of paper and buy them. That was a long, long time ago. But now it's all electronic. But we'll go back to the old school days. And we're going to have a T-bill auction where there are T-bills all over the table. And investors are coming in to buy T-bills. They know that if they buy a T-bill, in 1 year, they'll get $1,000 back. So we're going to have this auction. I am the cashier at the auction and the hostess. My name is Mabel. And I am going to walk into this auction, and I'm going to come up to you. And you're walking around, and hi there, young man. My goodness, you are attractive. Aren't you a cute young man? Yes. Are you looking for a treasury bill? Well, we've got some very nice ones over here. I recommend those with the green border. They look so nice in your desk while you wait for your $1,000. You want to buy one of them, don't you? Well, what are you going to pay me for it, young man? Tell me the price.
$975.
Is that a quote or is that the price?
$987.50.
Well, that's a very nice. Okay. Oh, let's make it a round thing. Just say $980. Okay, for me. $980. Well, okay. We'll take $980. Earl, bag one, $980. Drag it through the garden. Well, thank you, young man. And we got it in a nice bag, and you have a very nice day, and I'll see you. You'll get your $1,000 in a year. Okay. Crank it out here. Look. Price, face value, interest, and yield. This is really, don't get intimidated. This is actually easy. What was the price he paid? What did he pay for it? $980. Okay, $980. Now you tell me real quick. What's the face value? What is he going to get back in a year? $1,000. So tell me, how much dollar interest will the young man get? $20. Very good. So now we can calculate the yield. He just said he got $20 back. Now how much did he invest? $980. Don't say $1,000. Don't put $1,000 down there because I'll have a multiple choice answer for you if you put $1,000. I'll own you on that, okay? It's $980. The yield would be how much he gets in interest divided by how much he invested. And this is annual because it's exactly 1 year, which makes T-bills a great example for this. And so if you take $20 divided by $980, you get 2.04%. That was his yield, 2.04%. Isn't that great? You've just calculated your first bond yield. You can go on Facebook tonight and say, I can calculate bond yields. Uh-huh. Who's bad? I am. Well, a little more than a year later, I'm overseeing another T-bill auction. And here you come back in. Well, there you are again. My goodness, how nice to see you. You got your $1,000 back for that other T-bill. Good, good. And you're here for another one. Well, how nice. I hope I can see you at every auction. Why don't you bring your girlfriend? You don't have a girlfriend? I got a couple I know. They used to go with a guy named Jared. They're still in school right now. Too soon? Okay. Anyway. Well, you're looking around, and 980 sound good to you? But no. You say, hold on there, you old cow. I'm looking around this room, and I don't see a whole lot of people buying these. As a matter of fact, I hear crickets chirping. No one's buying this paper today. So what are you going to offer me for a price?
Lower.
Good, because the demand is not as strong. So you can catch me at, I understand, the government will sell that debt. Whatever it needs, it's going. If it has to print more treasury bills and put them out there, if the price is that low, it will do it. That is how sovereigns work. It's not just the U.S. It's all sovereigns. They will get their money, even if they have to print truckloads of securities, of treasury securities. They'll get their money. So give me a price.
$950.
Good. Very good. $950. Okay, Earl, bag one. $950. Do it again. What's the fate? What will he get back in a year? What's he going to get back in a year? Yeah, $1,000. Okay, now tell me, real quick. Talk to me. What is the end? How much interest did he earn? Can you tell me that?
$50.
So now we can actually crank this $50. Divided by 950 to see the yield. And if we do that, 50 divided by 950, 5.26%. You're seeing one of the most fundamental principles in all of finance. Right there in front of you. And I'll actually have you, woman, tell me the principle that's involved. When the price goes down, what happens to the yield?
The price goes up.
When the price of a security goes down, all other things being equal, the yield goes up. That is one of the most rock-solid principles in all of finance. Lower price, higher yield. Lower price, higher yield. Higher price, lower yield. You need to get that tattooed on your arm. I'll tell you, if you have that on your arm and you're pinned down on Market Street by the finance gang, you show them that, they'll be down with you. You're cool. You got it? It is a solid principle. And it is a principle that is so physics that we can use it for manipulating the economy, for manipulating the fates of nations, for moving the world, as the Federal Reserve does with this simple little rule. It's universal. It's actually, we have encountered, you probably don't know this, but we've encountered alien civilizations. And, I mean, they all know this. I mean, it's a common language. We say the higher the price, the lower the yield. And they'll say, well, duh, now we're going to invade and eat all of you. Okay, but they respect us because we know that principle too. Okay, that sets the stage. Higher price, lower yield. Lower price, higher yield. And now we can look at that one last tool of monetary policy of the Fed, the one that is called the open market operations, the one that is the most common of all of the tools that the Fed will use. And when I talk about it being common, it's used every day. When I talk about it being common, It's used to the tune of billions and billions of dollars every day. I'm not talking about little transactions. I'm talking about oceans of money and treasury bills moving across the markets of the world because of this principle that is exploited by the Federal Reserve to manage the American economy. That's why it is so important to talk about it in this finance class. That's why it just annoys me when all these textbooks that try to pretend that the government isn't there behind everything that we do are being disingenuous. Here's how an open market operation works. Now, it starts with the Federal Open Market Committee. The Federal Open Market Committee comprises the seven governors. It also comprises five district bank presidents, five of the 12. Now, four of them serve on two-year terms, rotating two-year terms. So in other words, you might have the president of the Atlanta Bank, Federal Reserve District Bank, there for 2 years, and then when his term is up, he would be replaced by the chairman of the Boston Federal Reserve Bank. But there is one of those five who is permanent. That one is the president of the New York Fed District Bank, what we call the Empire Bank. He has a permanent voting seat. The reason being that he is the one whose bank has the domestic trading desk, the DTD. Now, when I talk about desk, I'm not referring to something, one of those home-built IKEA desks or something. I'm talking about floors of traders overseen by a domestic trading desk manager. So here's how this works. The FOMC meets. Now, if you saw that video that I posted, you saw this actually in action when there was a little secret that went on in that video, and I should have brought it up before now. But the secret was that while you saw that animated table, it was such a cheesy video, that table with all those people talking and the people sitting on the benches on the side and yakking. But then, when they went and started talking about the FOMC votes on monetary policy, if you look carefully, the room was cleared of all except the governors and the bank presidents. The vote is secret when they do this because they don't want traders jumping in front of what they're trying to pull on the market. So anyway, let's say that the economy, we're back in 2008. In the last months of 2008, panic is all through the markets. And so the Fed, which I showed you, had been crushing M1 for some years to the point where they knew darn well they were at least partly responsible for the fiasco, for the complete collapse of the global financial system that everyone was trying to avert. They knew darn well that because they had had such a strict, tight monetary policy, they were responsible. So they freaked out and they said immediately, we have got to expand the money supply. Let's expand the money supply. They voted, they said, oh yeah, we got to do this and cover our tracks and hope that no one notices that for all those years we weren't even printing enough money to accommodate the growth of the American economy because the euro dollars we were trying to use your people's money for euro dollar transactions at the big dog league. Okay, so now we're going to expand. We're just going to shovel money into the market as fast as we can. How do they do it? Okay, were you alive in 2008? Do you happen to recall money falling out of the air anytime? You sure? I mean, sometimes you forget little things like that. Okay, yeah. See, the problem is that the Fed doesn't shovel money to us. It shovels money to banks. And we know how trustworthy they are. But no, we'll leave that for another time. The money, this whole mechanism works through the banks. The domestic trading desk has, as I described, all of these traders hundreds. Now let's zero in on one of them. You, madam, are a trader. Are you a finance major? Accounting, right? Mother of God. We're working on a cure. It's still a little dodgy. We tried to give it to a mouse accountant, and the mouse accountant just exploded. So we've got to refine the vaccine. Okay. In your desk, you have drawers on both sides. It's one of those cool desks. It's not one of those phony ones. It's got a little plate here. It's got the desk drawers on both sides. My cats like those because I can open them up, and then they can walk behind the desk and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, on the left side of your desk, you have treasury bills. Now, the Fed put these in your desk because the Fed went to the auction of the treasury and bought them. And then it walks around. You know, there's a maintenance guy. Definitely you. You're the janitor, and every night you replenish the desks with treasury bills out of this cart that you push along that's right next to the mop, you know, to mop the floors and all that. And on the other drawer, you have cash, money, dollars. Now, they don't let you do that. You're dodgy. So they give it to someone who looks really respectable. They give it to you because you've never, well, maybe that one time, but that was just because of that party and everyone wanted White Castle cheeseburgers. But other than that, this is your portfolio. This is your trading portfolio. You're a Fed trader, a desk trader. Now, out here, here is a bank, one of the banks that you do trades with from time to time. Now, banks have to make money. So a lot of their money, they'll put into investments that are more or less risky based upon rules and regulations and their own preferences for risk. But they must keep a portfolio of Tier 1 capital that is super safe. That Tier 1 capital is a mirror image in many ways of what's in your desk. In the vault would be T-bills, which are super, super safe. And in the vault, there would also be dollar bills. Now, technically, most of those dollar bills are not in their vault. There is this vast, vast ocean called the federal funds market. This is that money that I told you was available for banks to borrow from each other, the Fed funds market. Well, in the Fed funds market, there are all these dollars that create the supply of dollars. And there is this demand for lendable funds, banks wanting money from each other. And they set a federal funds rate. Banks can borrow from each other in this vast ocean of bank money. But of course, you know, it's literally in the vault. It's in the Fed funds market, so it's in the vault. But it's available for interbank lending. Now, this Fed funds rate is kind of important because a lot of interest rates that they lend to businesses and people, the Fed funds rate is like a base on that. Well, we base our loans Fed funds rate plus 3%, something like that. Now, the Fed wants to move that Fed funds rate around, but it can't move it by decree. It's a free market rate. It's an open market. It's supply and demand driven. Keep that in mind. Okay. Now, the Fed the desk manager has told all the desk traders, including you, we need to get money into the banks. Because then the Fed funds market will swell with money and there'll be more money for lending to other banks and also be more money to lend to all the people out there in the businesses that need money. They are going to expand the money supply. Now, here's what comes next. You want, I'm a bank president. I'm the president of this bank. You want me to have money. What do you have to so that I will accept more money from you? What do I have that you can buy that's just as safe as my as what I have? You want me to have more of these. So what are you going to try to buy from me to get more of those? Bingo. So you call me up. What are you going to do? You want to buy treasuries from me. So call me up on the phone. Ring, ring, hello, ring, hello, hello. Go to, what?
I'm going to buy some treasury notes from you.
Oh, you are? Go to hell. Click. Well, you're a persistent person. So you're going to call back. Ring, ring. What do you want? Pay me for my treasuries. How much are you going to pay me for my treasuries? Just give me a price. $95? Okay, $950? Go to hell. Click. I like my treasuries. Click. Ring, ring. What do you want? No, don't say 105. For God's sake, that's a negative interest rate. It's above you offer me $950. Go above it. $975. Okay. So, she has just used demand pressure. Remember, she is one of all these traders, all of them demanding treasury bills. So she's going to buy a treasury bill from me and put it in her desk, and in exchange, she's going to put dollars in my account in the Fed funds market. Now, the demand, what happened to the price? What did you do to the price of treasury bills to induce me to sell one to you? What did you do to the price? You started at $950, then you went to? Okay, you increased the price of treasury bills. But by increasing the price of treasury bills, what did you do to the yields on them? Well, spank me, Jesus. You have just lowered the yield on treasury bills, which is another base interest rate on which all other interest rates would be driven. So by all of this demand surge, demand for T-bills makes prices of T-bills go up, and therefore yields on T-bills go down. So you have forced down, through an open market operation, the price of T-bill, the yields on T-bills. You have brought some interest rates have now gone down. That should stimulate the economy. But you've also done another thing, too, because you have also pushed more money into the Fed funds market. By paying me for that T-bill, you have pushed more money in. So what have you done to the supply of lendable funds in the Fed funds market? What have you done to the supply? You've increased the supply, which means that the Fed funds rate goes down. The Fed can't set it, but it can use open market operations to push the Fed funds rate down. So you've done a double whammy on interest rates. By the surge in demand for T-bills from banks, you've pushed the price of them up and the yields on T-bills down. And by paying the bank for those T-bills, you have pushed more money into the federal funds market, increasing the supply of lendable funds, driving the federal funds rate down. Two different base interest rates you have pushed down. More money in the economy, lower interest rates. That is how the economy gets stimulated. So this expansionary monetary policy expands the economy, theoretically. The problem was, in 2008, that the theory had one practical problem. The banks got all that extra money and they didn't lend it. They said, oh, there's a credit crunch. We can't lend to people and businesses. They're risky. So what did they do? They went overseas and invested in high-yield things overseas. And they also did another trick that I'll show you in a while. That's why the recession turned into the worst one since the Great Depression, because the credit crisis just kept going. The banks were getting all this money through the open market operations to expand the economy. They weren't using it to lend to people and businesses to get the economy back on its feet. They were hoarding the money and putting it into investments that didn't do us any good. That was why the recession just got dragged on and on for so darn long. Well, it went on and on because it was such a crisis. Now, we come to the present time. Eventually, the banks release the money, and the money is coming out, pouring out all over the place. And as I told you before, sooner or later, I mean, there was a huge gap of liquidity to fill. I mean, the Fed could do this for years, and it took a long time to essentially fill in that hole from those years when they weren't printing M1. It took a long time to fill up that hole with enough money to close the liquidity gap. But sooner or later, the liquidity gap was closed. And in every case, if a central bank prints money for too long, you eventually get too many dollars. You get a liquidity overhang. And of course, that's the inflation. And you don't want inflation, because inflation erodes a whole lot of things. So the Fed and any central bank will eventually have to turn around and in an orderly fashion or in a disorderly fashion, however you want to do it, they're going to have to turn around and do a contractionary monetary policy. China knows very well that it has a liquidity overhang from hell of yuan. Now, for a long time, the economy could absorb all of this extra paper money that the People's Bank of China was printing, because the economy was essentially had a lot of latent potential. But sooner or later, that latent potential becomes real growth, and sooner or later, you've got to stop printing all that extra money, or it's just going to hang over and start creating inflation. Well, when the Chinese government did finally, just a while back, start trying to stop the printing of money, well, that's just what buckled the economy. It's sort of like if you're skating on ice and you're letting yourself go faster and faster, even a tiny bump will just send you flying. And that was what the Chinese government found out, is that they had let the economy just roar and roar and grow for so long that when they did try to finally just touch it to stop it, boom, it was just like the whole economy buckled right in front of their eyes. They freaked out and they said, oh no, we didn't mean it. And they lowered interest rates. Oh, no, we didn't mean it. So in other words, they're postponing the inevitable. It's like that, that crack cocaine you use. You've been using it, and then finally one day you decide, well, no, I've got a job interview, so I'm not going to use it. Well, you look like a mess, look like hell at the interview, and you start talking about Cthulhu and stuff like that. So you go right back to it because it freaked you out. But sooner or later, you'll have to, because they hired you, because apparently they needed a really evil manager and Cthulhu was attractive to them. So anyway, I don't know what the hell that all meant, but anyway. Now we come to where we are right now in the American economy. The Fed has been hinting and whispering, well, we're going to have to stop printing money and expanding because there's danger of inflation. They're worried, and they've been trying to signal the market. Okay, we're going to do this. And they keep not doing it. Oh, we're serious. We're going to have to stop printing all this money. And they keep not doing it. And quite honestly, about everyone knows that a lot of there has been inflation, very strong inflation, but it's been a sectorized inflation the stock markets are going up so were going up so spectacularly, and that was almost certainly just pure overhang of liquidity. It wasn't really that those companies were doing that much more fabulously. It was just the inflation was being contained in the stock markets simply because banks are allowed now to invest in stocks, play in the stock markets. So they were taking all that money for the most part. They were just buying stocks and propelling the stock markets upward. So the Fed knows, we got inflation. We've got to stop this. But they are still, freaking out because when they really do turn it around, even if they try to keep it a secret in their Federal Open Market Committee meeting, the markets will figure it out within minutes. Yep, the Fed's finally going at it, and our economy might do something kind of like a mini version of the Chinese economy. But anyway, sooner or later, they're going to have to do it. The FOMC is going to have to say, contract. And so, here we go again. Here's the desk, trader. And here is the, here's the desk, trader. And here is a bank. Now, the desk manager has told you, get the money away from the banks. Pull that money back from the banks. In your left drawer is your T-bills, and your right drawer are the dollars. The only difference between T-bills and dollars, they're both highly liquid, extremely safe. It's just that T-bills, I can't do anything as a bank with them. Dollars, I can lend out. Okay, but anyway, and I at the bank have my portfolio of T-bills and dollars. And those dollars are, of course, in the federal funds market. Most of them, some are in the vault. All these dollars out here in this federal funds market creating the supply of federal funds and the demand for the federal funds to create the equilibrium federal funds rate. Same thing as before, but now we're in 2015. You're the trader. Desk manager said, get the dollars out of the banks. Get them back here so we can shred them up. So you call me up. Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Hello. I'm a little older. I have more style now. It's not 2008 anymore. That was so 2008 back then. You need to get dollars away from me. So what are you going to do? Sell what? Okay, go ahead. You want me to buy one of your treasury bills? You're selling treasury bills? Well, I've been hearing that all morning. You want to sell treasury bills? I like my treasury bills. Go to hell. Click. Ring, ring. Woman, will you stop calling me? I mean, if you like me that much, go get a Ashley Madison account. We'll talk there. Okay.
So I guess I have to lower the price of the treasury.
Yeah, you got to make it attractive to me. $950? Go to hell. Click. Ring, ring. Damn, woman. What? Offer me again.
$925.
Oh, well. You're pushing down the price. The supply of T-bills is going up. When the supply of anything goes up, the price goes down. What's happening to the yield? Price goes down, yield goes. Well, again, spank me, Jesus. We have used an open market operation to push up an interest rate that is base for other interest rates. So in other words, you have just sold me a T-bill, and you have taken away some of my dollars and sent them to the shredder. Have you ever seen at the Fed they give you a bag of shredded money? It's actually kind of cool. I got one when I was a kid. I was trying to glue that back together like a boss. I mean, it, oh well. Anyway. Well, that's interesting. So in other words, this is actually over there. See that right there? That was demand for treasury bills. Over here, that's actually a supply. Supply is flooding the market. In the original expansion, you were demanding T-bills. In this turn, with contraction, you are actually wanting. Okay, so now the Fed funds market has lost money. So in other words, the supply of Fed funds is contracting, so the Fed funds rate rises. Second leg. Yeah.
Okay, this is confusing a little because it seems like the bank has the control, not the...
Oh, yeah. I can make it move back and forth, but I don't want to do it too much. Why? Well, you see, because it's not just one bank. It's hundreds of thousands of banks would be involved in this operation. But the big banks, yeah. This is all coordinated game. This is, before you even call me, I'm a huge bank. We already know where we're going to set that price for this. It's rigged. You know, I know very well that we might play the game at 950. But I know very well, we both know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, 925. Okay? So you're right about that. The little banks involved in this, they're just like the small-time grocery stores. While the giant megas like Walmart and Hy-Vee, they're setting the market. So it really isn't competitive, but still. Okay, now, let me go to the last little trick in this. There's a hidden story going on behind this. Now this gets, I promise you, if you actually understand what I've done here, you're good. It takes a while for it to sink in. Listen to this podcast again and get the feel of how this dynamic plays out. And remember, this is happening every day, 24/7, minute by minute. Oceans of currency moving. So far, for maybe 7 years, it has been an expansionary monetary policy. This side has been playing out. The Fed will, the traders, to push more money into the economy and more money into the economy, the traders will just call the banks and say, we want to buy some more treasury bills from you. And the banks will sell them the treasury bills, and the banks will, the Fed will transfer electronically funds to these banks in the Fed funds markets. Again, one more time. The Fed just keeps pushing the money in. It keeps calling the banks, buying their treasury bills. And then when the bank sells the treasury bills, well, the bank demand, or the Fed demanding the treasury bills, pushes the prices of the treasury bills up, keeps the yields down there at extraordinarily low levels. Interest rates have been at ridiculously low levels for a long, long time because of this constant pressure. Demand for T-bills. And also, all these dollars flowing into the Fed funds market just keeps the supply just like soaking wet with liquidity from all these dollars, which keeps the supply of lendable funds way out there, which keeps the federal funds rate very low. Sooner or later, that has to end because there will be a liquidity overhang in inflation. But here's the trick. I said, the Fed just keeps going. You keep coming to me for treasury bills. You just keep coming to me and coming to me and buying treasury bills, and I keep selling you treasury bills. Well, wouldn't my desk in my bank, I've got a really nice desk, Souder. I put it together myself. Well, I didn't. You know, I had some of my minions do it. Okay. How do I keep having treasury bills for you to buy from me? Oh, there's the interesting gambit. You see, remember at the beginning of this lecture I told you about the Treasury is constantly holding auctions because they're so desperate for money? Here's that table with all those Treasury bills on them. You see, every time the Treasury holds an auction, that means that the supply of treasuries goes up. And these auctions are happening all the time. The government runs such massive budget deficits. It has since 2002. So when the supply of anything goes up, what happens to its price? When the Treasury holds one of these auctions, what happens to the price? Supply goes up, price goes down. Don't ask questions. You know, say down, man. Show me Butch. You know, remember Arnold Schwarzenegger? You know what he said? Don't be a girly man. Okay? So when we're talking economics, be Arnold. Be the Terminator. Hasta la vista. Supply goes up, price goes down. When the price of treasuries goes down, what happens to the yields? Yields go up. Okay, the auction causes the price of treasuries to fall. The banks go to the auctions when the prices fall and they buy the treasury bills. Where did they get the money to buy them? Because you just gave me money in the last open market operation. So now I buy the treasury, put it into my portfolio, and then when you start demanding them again, the price goes up, and I sell it to you at a markup, and then I have cash that goes into the federal funds market so that I can go to the next auction when the prices have gone down, so that then I have another treasury bill that you will, when you start demanding, the price will go up, and I'll be able to buy it at a higher price. I'll be able to sell it to you at a higher price than I bought it at the Treasury auction over and over and over again. That's why the money was not getting into the economy, because it was an engine where the Fed just kept pushing money. You pushed money to me to buy my treasuries, and the price would go up, and I'd be able to sell it to you at a nice high price. But then I just sit back for the next auction. I knew the government was running such massive deficits, it'd have to go back for an auction within a week, 2 weeks. Well, once that happened, the supply of treasuries would go up, price would go down, and I could use my money to buy more of them when they were cheap, just to wait for you to come back and buy them, pushing the price up because you were buying them. You got the trick? 7 years we've been doing this. And why were we doing this? Why did we let this happen? Because that was the way we got the money to run the government. Because the Fed would just keep buying, just accumulating those treasury bills, essentially financing the government and using the banks as essentially a catalyst intermediary. But not just any banks. You were talking to me, you thought I was a little banker. You thought I was some small banker. Finally, one night, you're walking down the street, and you see a shadowy figure in the alley. And you say, you're the banker I buy treasury bills from. And I step out of the shadows, and I say, no, ma'am, I'm Batman. That's all I have for you. Go.